unlike the hotel wall.
Actually, your name hasn't come up.
Yes, House Committee on Revenue for April 9th will come to order. College, you'll recall that when we left off yesterday, we were on a public, we were dealing with a public hearing on House Bill 2074, and I'd like to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2074 now. And I'm going to see if the people who are who signed up last time are still available. Justin Martin, Hasina Squires. Let's see. And David Bernberg. And is there anyone else who wants to be heard on this bill this morning? Okay. Please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires, on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. I'll make my testimony brief since you did have a lengthy discussion about this bill yesterday and a number of people supporting it. Just would like to say on behalf of the Special Districts Association that we do support House Bill 2074. We do believe that the Multnomah County Tax Supervising Conservation Commission provides a very good service, particularly as it relates to our smaller districts who are not as sophisticated in dealing with local budget law. And despite the fact that we're being asked to share in this revenue, in this assessment, we still support the bill, and we appreciated Director Linhares meeting with us during the interim, talking about what that assessment and fee would be and how it would be established. He did indicate in his testimony yesterday that we had some concerns over the dollar amount. He did reduce the dollar amount that he was originally requesting in half, so the minimum assessment is $250. And we've received comments from a number of our special districts that they support the bill, and our association supports it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin. I'm here today on behalf of Portland Public Schools in full support of House Bill 2074. Essentially, the TSCC is a valuable resource for the district. It does three things. One, provides expertise in the areas of Oregon local budget law, provides qualified commissioners, and three, acts as an independent resource for taxpayers. The commission answers questions, provides training for our staff, and updates a reference manual continually that provides for our folks a resource in plain English and in logical order. In terms of qualified commissioners, through our budget process, we roll out several public hearings. We then do listening sessions, and our school board commissions a citizen budget review board that looks into technical aspects and hears from concerned community members and parents. We then take those discussions to the TSCC for their advice and really another layer of independent review. Finally, as an independent resource for taxpayers, the commission offers two things. One, more accountability, as I just mentioned, and two, citizens an alternative if they prefer to pose questions about our budget to an independent third party. By offering independent, thorough, and informed review of our budget, the TSCC offers a vital service to our district, taxpayers, citizens, and students. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today, and we urge your support of House Bill 2074.
Thank you. Now we're going to have a different opinion, I think.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Barenberg, representing the City of Portland. Do I have that look on my face that I'm going to
no,
have?
No, I have the little.
The chart?
I have a little chart here with the with the check marks on it.
The City of Portland is in opposition to this legislation. The city feels that it has adequate safeguards and procedures in place that render this unnecessary. We have an elected auditor, and as I was driving in this morning, heard his report on the radio about the number of employees we have per citizen and how that's compared over the years, the number or what our current bonding capacity is, and other very specific information about city budgeting. And so there's a check internally with a separately elected city official. We have annual audits. We have Citizen Budget Committee. We are have many of our budget discussions on cable constantly, and we have in-depth and lengthy discussions. We feel that because of the cost, the limited usefulness, the lack of comparable organizations serving other counties around the state, and just the structure of Portland with our auditor, that it renders it superfluous in the case of the city of Portland. So for those reasons, we would oppose this measure. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? It occurred to me as I was listening, Justin, to you talk about the Portland Public Schools, that I don't think you quite said this, but I'm wondering if the school district finds it useful to have an independent, unbiased evaluator for its various initiatives as it deals with its own budget and as it deals with things like taking measures to the public for their vote. Is that one of the uses of this material, or have I just simply missed it?
Mr. Chair, I would say yes, you are correct.
Okay. Coming from 100 miles south, I'm not familiar with this, with the uses of this commission, but it does occur to me that in many elections, there's a significant disagreement about what the facts are, about what a measure actually does, or what the effect would be on a taxing district or on the people. And I can imagine where, in the area that I come from, having an independent commission that could be trusted to tell the truth might be very helpful in the process of determining of presenting that information to the public. Thank you very much. Are there other questions? Thank you. We appreciate your testimony today. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard this morning on House Bill 2074? And with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2074.
Oh, yeah, it's me.
Do you have what you need on 2067?
I do.
You do. Okay. We'll open the work session on House Bill 2067. And, colleagues, when we left, we were talking about additional amendments. Let's discuss where we are. Chris, do you have something for us?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In your packet, the new amendment is the -4 amendment, which is identical to the -3 amendment with one exception, and that is in Section 5 of the bill. That credit, the sunset date for that credit, has been moved from January 1, 2014 to January 1, 2016. So that's on page 5 of the -4, line 11. Where it now reads 2016 in the -3, it had said 2014.
And which one are we talking about?
And this is the Reservation Enterprise Zone Income Tax Credit.
I see. Did you make a new sheet?
There is a
summary.
I did not make a new SMS. That has not changed. The SMS as it is.
No, that makes sense. What I was referring to was the material with the yellow lines on it.
No, Mr. Chair.
The -2 amendment. So what we'd want to do, if we wanted to refer to that, we could just change that one item?
Correct. And on that, the sheet with the yellow highlighting, the -2 amendment, item 1.418, which is the fifth from the bottom, instead of the proposed sunset date, from the top, fifth item from the top. Reservation Enterprise Zone.
So that becomes 16 instead of 14.
Exactly.
I see. Okay.
Mr. Chair, can I ask why?
Yes, let's have a conversation about that. Representative Bailey, I think, wants to talk about that anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Berger, there were two reasons for the movement of that sunset date. The first was because of a reclassification. Although it's a Reservation Enterprise Zone tax credit, and the initial understanding and glancing at it was that all enterprise zones are sort of created equally, and so it should be in the business category. In discussing it with the folks who created it, it was intended more around community development, and that it seemed to fit more in the community services category. The other issue was to address a point that Representative Reed raised during the last discussion, which was whether or not there were any credits in here that had a lag in implementation such that the imposition of a sunset on one that did not previously have a sunset might create a distortion in what the credit was trying to achieve during its initial period, so that during the review of that credit, when it comes up for review, there would be insufficient data to understand whether or not it had been effective. And so for both of those reasons, a decision was made to recategorize it under community services and push that sunset date back by 2 years.
Yes, Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I guess that it's a good argument, except what's the difference between that and the long-term rural enterprise zone? A reservation enterprise zone is a business development tool, and so is a long-term rural enterprise zone. I'm just not buying that. It's a social service.
Where is it? I'm sorry.
And we don't need to belabor this argument, Mr. Chair. I'm just pushing back a little bit.
Well, what we've done with the rural enterprise zone is we've added 6 months to the sunset date in this bill.
Well, I guess my pushback here is an enterprise zone essentially works the same way, whether it's on a reservation or in a rural area or in Salem. This is a small, we're in the weeds here,
yes.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, we are.
Okay? We don't need to spend the rest of the day here.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Please, go ahead.
Respectfully, because I enjoy the weeds so much.
I know it.
And really,
don't
Mr.
ever
Chair,
argue with an economist, Mr. Chair.
I hope that the committee will agree that House Bill 2067 is a gift that keeps on giving. Representative Berger, I had very much the same inclination that you had in looking at this and push back on that as well. A number of folks, including the Treasurer's Office, submitted a fairly extensive amount of data to me to explain why the enterprise zones were not all created equal. So I was persuaded by that argument.
Representative Betts?
Mr. Chair, is this a time we are to address this in general? Or
I think you can talk about anything you want to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm
Related to this bill, yes.
I want to begin by thanking the Chair for giving me time to become more familiar with this idea and possibly submit an amendment. I'm not submitting an amendment, and part of the reason is that I only was able to finally get to a point of understanding generally some of the issues that are going on. The overall idea that's being suggested is the correct idea, that is that we must review these tax credits. Through the help of some CPAs and others, it's become apparent, though, that these tax credits that we are dealing with today break into three pieces. That is the exemption/deduction piece, maybe the long-term piece, which Representative Bailey identified and placed a number of exemptions in, and then finally what I'll call the discretionary piece, that is the piece that we hope we are suggesting folks should exercise in their discretion engage in. This device, as presented, unfortunately intermingles some of those, and I think if we took a little more time, we could probably pull out different of those incentives as compared to exemptions, as compared to shared costs, and put them in the proper categories. But the key element is one that became clear actually in conversations last evening, and that is that if these are tax expenditures, which they are, we should be exercising the same degree of care in their continuation as Ways and Means does in determining whether or not it's going to proceed.
Yeah.
And what happens here, because of the abrupt cutoff that is the nature of a sunset, we don't engage in that
necessarily engage in that debate. We don't have the thumbs-up, thumbs-down approach before the sunset. And as a result, that failure then creates a default situation where the credit is going to end regardless of the debate. And these things are extremely complicated, and I'm becoming more and more aware of that in our dealing with the Betsy, for example, and deserve great care. If we're going to invest this kind of money, we need to exercise great care in this in deciding not to. And this device, although it is correct in triggering a review, doesn't ensure the review. Now, I apologize for not getting to Representative Bailey any earlier than 10 minutes before the hour today when he had already left for this meeting. But I just became, I have just reached the point where I can talk with some understanding about this issue. So there, Mr. Chairman, is why I don't have a amendment this morning. So, good idea. Like all of our ideas, it probably could use some more work.
Let me respond to one of the points you made, or two points. The first one is I'm gratified that you believe that a review is the kind of process we should engage in. And then just my thought about dividing it up into three, in this case three hunks, it could have been four or some other number, was simply because this committee doesn't have the resources that Ways and Means that does. It is ramped up to do a budget every 2 years. And in that sense, everything sunsets every 2 years for the Ways and Means Committee, except for those few items that are continuously appropriated by statute. dividing it up into three hunks means that a committee with fewer resources and a smaller number of people involved and no subcommittees may actually be able to get the work done on a smaller number of items than the Ways and Means Committee works on. The second point that you made, I think, is a very important one, and that is and I'm going to translate it a little bit into talking about it as dealing with the abruptness issue. One of the reasons, from my point of view at least, why we didn't start this cycle in 12, we started in 14 instead, is so that we can use the 09-10 interim to consider the first chunk and therefore get out ahead of the curve. And since we have not had this experience before, we can either deal with all of them or part of them, depending upon how much time they take in the upcoming interim. And at that point, we can either modify some that we think need modification, if we can get a 3/5 vote to do it immediately in 10 or 11, or make changes that begin in 14. And so forth. My hope is that this process will be far enough ahead of the game so that people are forewarned. And then one final point on this one is that the way this bill has been drafted, and I think this is true throughout, and maybe Representative Bailey can help us with that, is that it does not end any transaction in progress. There are a number of these credits that spread out over a period of years, and any that have actually been begun continue to the full extent of the time that would be allowed under the statute in effect at the time they started, even though the credit may have sunsetted for new transactions. Now, have I got that right?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to echo and emphasize a couple of points that you made, and one is the issue of when we actually do this work, and I believe that the interim approach is the right approach. We need to get on top of this, and by the end of the first interim, we will have learned, first of all, can we do this in the time frame that we've talked about? And if not, then we can do something about it. But we need to get started. And secondly, the abruptness issue of sunsets, almost all of these credits actually have a sunset, almost all, and therefore would abruptly end at some point. And the point of this bill is to make sure that we have in place a process to review these before that abrupt end, and make sure that something doesn't fall off the cliff without us noticing.
Thank you. And of course, it does allow the legislature two chances before the sun sets here if we follow the schedule I was suggesting.
Right.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Benz brought up a good point that sparked something in my mind to say. Although I'm not a CPA, so I'm not entirely clear on some of the terminology. But as far as the categorization and the different types, my understanding is that legislative revenue has done a really good job of categorizing these so that they are only tax credits. But as far as other expenditures and deductions that were mentioned, I think that's an important point, that this is really the first step in a larger look at how this state spends money. And at the end of the day, tax credits and tax expenditures are spending, and we need to carefully control our spending, and we need to take a look and ensure that government is spending taxpayer dollars wisely. And I think this is the first time that we will have had a regular review process in statute to review a portion of that spending, and I think it's a tool in the door for a larger conversation about how we expand that circle in the future to look at the deductions and exemptions that Representative Vance mentioned. I think that's a great point.
Thank you. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for the positive remarks. I would just say a couple of things. First, we are actually adding 27 sunsets to this list. Contains 27 laws that currently do not have sunsets. The key piece of the discussion thus far has been on not on any disagreement over the need to do this. We do need to do this. The question is the mechanism that requires a focus on the good or the bad of it. The discussion we're going to have later this morning on the Betsy is a perfect example of the need to look at these things very, very carefully as we approach either the sunset that now would be created under this. And I don't see a mechanism in this bill that ensures the interim review that Representative Riley suggested, which I think is a good idea,
right.
And nor a requirement that we bring this in. I would have to say that as to the three-fifths, I would that needs a further look because I am not certain to which of these the three-fifths actually applies, and it may be a far smaller group than has been assumed.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, if that is taken out of the equation, then the issue is going to be clearly the mechanism of review, and the up and down vote will not be so challenging. So I would just say that there's an opportunity to create that mechanism with possibly less reference to the three-fifths issue.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Berger.
A question. The original bill had a three-fifths clause on it. It is the amended... Is it a three-fifths vote?
I'm sorry. Paul, did you want to address that issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, we did, Chris and I met with counsel, Dexter Johnson and Kay Toswell, and the original bill was a three-fifths because the only credits in the bill were those without a sunset. So the interpretation of counsel was that if you're taking bills without a sunset and then applying a sunset to them, then that would be a bill for raising revenue. With the amended version that you see in the dash threes, it does have a number of bills, a number of credits that have current sunsets on them and moves them around. And in fact, the effect of doing that over both the 11-13 and 13-15 biennia is to have a substantial revenue loss if you look at Chris's revenue impact estimates. So conclusion of counsel was that because there is a revenue loss in any the planning period that we're looking at for budget purposes, and there is another purpose for the bill, in other words, to systematically evaluate these credits, then therefore their opinion is that it's not a bill for raising revenue. So that
do we have that in writing?
We do not. We have counsel available to come address the committee on that issue. Would you, they said they would be happy to do that if you'd like me to go.
Our stock manual still requires that when they believe there's a three-fifths requirement that be noted in the bill, doesn't it?
Yes.
And the amendment has removed that, as I understand it.
Yes, and that's based on the meeting we had with the council.
So we don't have a written letter from them, but we do have evidence in the amendment itself that...
Again, we're in the weeds. I want to put it on the record.
Right.
That I'm not comfortable with this. I think it's a device. So we can go on. Are we moving this bill today, Mr.
Chair? That's my hope. It seems to me as though the bill is ready, but we certainly can get additional input from council before the bill hits the floor, if that would be valuable. I will note that the council wrote a very long letter several years ago. I refer to it as the 17-page letter, one section of which actually covers this issue pretty well. And the decision that they made in reference to this bill is quite consistent with the position they took several years ago on this whole topic in a more generic form. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, not to prolong this, Chris has asked that I point out something on the dash for revenue impact proposed legislation. There is a line here. Because this bill actually extends and expands sunsets for a number of tax credits, there is a need to have a statement as to why this is extending and expanding some tax expenditures. And as we've written here, that the purpose of the bill is to enable a systematic review of Oregon tax credits in a structured manner. I do think that language has done a pretty good job summing up the intent here. I'm sorry, that's on the revenue impact of proposed legislation.
Very bottom, the last line of type above the line at the bottom of the page.
And so that is a new addition on that sheet. And that also prompts me to reiterate that, and I think there are many who probably feel the same way, that clearly there are tax credits on this list that I think are incredibly valuable and that I personally intend to fight to keep and actually in communications on learning more about the reservation enterprise zone tax credit seems like a very valuable one as well. But so the purpose is not to go after any particular tax credit or to cut anybody off the knees, but to create a system for reviewing them.
Mr. Chair, yes. Where is the language? The purpose of this bill is to enable a systematic review of the Oregon tax credit in the bill.
It isn't. If you'll recall, Representative Berger, that when we started the process in the regular session last time, one of the things we cast about for was how to deal with tax credit bills and how we would describe them for the purpose of the tax expenditure report. And what we hit upon was that should go in the staff measure summary.
Okay,
or the revenue impact statement. In this case, it's in the revenue impact statement. So,
thank you.
We don't have, as you know, we do not yet have a statutory change to the description of the tax expenditure report to reflect the changes that we have been instituting in the committee. That may be something that we want to do, but we haven't done that yet. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to point out that in the review by the various tax professionals, it was described the disabled child item under family care medical 1.410 is structured, of course, as an exemption. As actually, in that instance, the taxpayer is allowed to take two exemptions, and as such, it would be the most likely item to fall in the category of a tax increase. And it might be worthwhile to ask legislative counsel to focus on that item first. There are others in that same group that could change the three-fifths issue, at least according to the tax professionals I've been speaking with.
Thank you. Let me respond to that this way. the purpose of this bill, as we've been emphasizing from the beginning, is not to repeal any particular item, but simply to establish a process that will allow us to appropriately administer this portion of the tax code. That being the case, it's not a bill for raising revenue. It's a bill for the administration of the tax code in the legislature. That's the object of it. When Ledge Council considered that issue in the 17-page letter that I've referred to, what they basically said was that if the legislature has a purpose which is clear, different from the purpose of raising revenue, then it's not a bill for raising revenue, even if, incidentally, it may raise some money. And I think that's the... I happen to agree with Ledge Council on this bill, that they've correctly interpreted that. I often, as you know, disagree with them about that kind of topic. And if we would like to have an explanation from them in writing, I suspect we can get one before the bill hits the floor. We probably can, even though they're very busy right now trying to deal with amendments for other committees as they approach the end of handling of House bills. Representative Bailey.
And they're doing yeoman's work, Mr. Chair. I also wanted to remind the committee that there is a -1 amendment in addition to the -4.
Yes.
The -1 amendment is the amendment that creates the rolling review. The -4 is the categorization and imposition of sunsets.
Right. Do you have a motion?
I do, Mr. Chair. I'd move the -1 amendment dated 3-2609 to House Bill 2067.
Representative Bailey moves the -1 amendment. Discussion? The -1 amendment simply establishes a sunset date for any new a tax credit enacted by the legislature that doesn't mention sunsets in the bill. Representative Berger.
Isn't this sort of prescribing the conduct of future legislatures?
Yes. It establishes a method whereby an ambiguous bill can be read. If the legislature doesn't mention sunsets, then this applies. If they do mention sunsets, then whatever they say applies.
Including no sunsets, Mr. Chair.
Correct. Yeah. If they were to say there will be no sunset on this one, then that would supersede what we're writing here.
That's thank you. That's the technicality I'm trying
right.
to get to.
Right. Any objection to the -1s? I don't see any. The -1s are adopted. Representative Bailey?
Mr. Chair, I move the -4 amendment dated 4709 to House Bill 2067.
Thank you. Representative Bailey moves the -4 amendment, the big amendment we've been discussing. Any further discussion? Any objection to the -4? -4 amendment is adopted. Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2067 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bailey moves House Bill 2067 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger, then Representative Brune, and then Representative Bentz.
I'll lead. Okay. I've held my fire because I know where you're going with this bill. So let me put on the record my feelings about this bill and what we're about. This is my fourth term on the Revenue Committee. Every time it comes up, the legislature's got to deal with these, the legislature's got to deal with these. Every time I say which ones, and every time somebody comes forward and says this one or that one, but I don't see the bill that actually calls for a review. I think this bill rearranges the chairs on the Titanic and very little else. There's nothing in it that says we're going to have a review process. And case in point, how many hours we have spent as a committee on one tax credit, the Betsy. So I don't know how we're going to get to even the first set of deck chairs here on this list, particularly since there's nothing in this bill that says we have to do a review. It just says they're going to sunset. That's what it says. If we are serious about this, I've been on this committee and I've been on many interims and they don't come up. Oh, we're too busy. Well, I think this is just saying, well, let's just rearrange these chairs. The ship goes on. The iceberg is before us. I can't support this kind of a thing that looks good but does essentially nothing. So I'm going to have to vote no at this point.
Thank you. Representative Brown.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the issue here that's being addressed is a real one, and I think that this bill as amended is a good, if not the best way, to do a broad brushed review of our tax credit expenditures. And therein lies the problem for me, Mr. Chair, in that it is a broad brushed approach, and once again with the caveat that it perhaps is the best way to do a broad brush approach. The problem is each of these tax credit expenditures that we're looking at are very narrow, very, very focused and small, if you will, in that they're not broad brush. They're made to elicit or to affect specific social or economic behavior, or to reward specific social and economic behavior. And each and every single one of these tax credits, without exception, is unique and different in that regard. And to Representative Berger's point about the Betsy, that just serves as the most recent great example. Very specific. It needs to be handled in a very focused, determined way looking at that. It cannot be handled, given the complexities, in a broad-brushed approach. So once again, Mr. Chair, I think it's a great broad-brushed approach. If that were the way to do it, I don't think it is, and I'll be opposed.
Thank you. Representative Bentz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have much to add that I haven't already said, so I'll just thank Representative Bailey for the effort. I think with some more work, it would be a more functional device. I fear that by stacking them all into 1 year, we're creating a workload that we as a group won't be up to dealing with, and therefore I think the device, although excellent in concept, still requires more work. So I'll be a no vote.
Thank you. Anyone else like to be heard? Let me just make a couple of comments about the workload issue and the interim issue. One of the things the Speaker announced a couple of days ago in passing on in discussing another matter was that he expected that interim committees would essentially be the same as session committees. I consider, with possible changes, because, of course, people may want to move around, I consider that a very important item for the administration of the legislature, because it will end the gap we have regularly had at the end of sessions before interim committees are established, during which time work can be done. I was appalled in my first session when the session was over at a reasonable time in early July, as I recall, in 2001. Interim committees were not established until after the end of the summer. My view has been that the interim has never been properly used by the legislature to get ready for future sessions. One of the reasons that I support this concept and that I like the idea very much that Representative Bailey has presented to us, has worked on, and of course Representative Riley and others have worked on before, is that it does give us an implicit structure for a substantial amount of work for this committee during the interim, and with the speaker's promise about what his intentions are for the interim, I do believe we have a decent shot at actually completing the review that this bill doesn't explicitly require but certainly implies. So I'm a strong proponent of this bill, and I hope that we're able to get this bill or something very like it through the legislature so that we can get on with that. And I can promise you that to the extent I have any control over it, we will get going on the review on the first chunk in the coming interim. Would you please call the roll? The vote is on the motion to move the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Bentz.
No.
Representative Berger.
No.
Representative Brown.
No.
Representative Gelser.
Aye.
Representative Call.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
No.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. The bill will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Bailey, will you carry?
I will, Mr. Chair, but if I might add in response to your comment, Please. We do stand on the shoulders of giants, which is actually, I guess, the only way I'm as tall as Representative Reed. I want to acknowledge all the work that Representative Riley and other members of this committee and folks that have come before have put into this. So while I'm pleased to carry the bill on the floor, I was, to quote another representative, given the ball at the one-yard line and able to carry it across. So I appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Bailey. I appreciate that comment. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2067. We'll open the work session on House Bill 2067.
2068.
I'm sorry. 2068. I just closed that one. I meant 2068.
It's back. It's true. Yeah.
If it keeps on giving.
Yeah. Okay. And giving.
And giving and giving and giving.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, in that case, Mr. Chair, I did have a few comments on 2067, if you
will. No, that's out of order. Chris?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2068, as drafted, just to refresh people's memory, the original intent was to create some sort of template language so that all credits that the legislature wants transferred can just point to this unified set of statutes and say whenever the assembly means a credit can be transferred, you just point to this statute. And there, one of the handouts you got in previous time was another yellow highlighted sheet, which seems to be a theme, I guess, highlighting the eight credits that currently have transfers and some of the variation of that language. And there was a work group chaired by Representative Benz to look at this. And in getting into it, the detail, it seemed to become clear that the time didn't allow for really fleshing everything out. So you have three amendments in front of you, the intent of which for the Dash 1 and Dash 2 is to codify the existing interpretation of existing language by the Department of Energy and Department of Revenue. So the intent there is not to be any law change, but just to make clear that the way that revenue, the way that administrative agencies have been interpreting existing statute pertaining to the credits is in fact correct. So in some sense, it sets the stage for future work. Now to talk about this individually, the Dash 1 specifically states that for four of the tax credits, the Betsy credit, which I'm looking at the Dash 1 now, I guess going in order, the 315-141 is the biomass credit. 315-354 is the Betsy credit. And then the reference to Oregon laws is the diesel engine retrofit repower. And then, I skipped, 315-514 is the film production video contribution credit. And so what the Dash 1 says is that the transferee for these can only be a C corporation, an S corporation, or a personal income taxpayer. And again, we may want to hear from energy or revenue, but the intent here is this is how revenue has been interpreting existing language. There should be no change here. It's just making very clear. As we saw in that other sheet, the language varies from each of these credits in terms of how it can be transferred. So the Department of Revenue is left in a situation of trying to interpret the statutes, and when they seek AG's advice, a lot of thought goes into the exact words that the legislature uses in looking for any differences. So here the intent is to codify that the transferee may be only one of those three entities. The Dash 2 gets at the number of times a credit may be transferred, and this is generic language that says when the assembly says an income tax credit can be transferred, it may be transferred or sold only once, unless the statute specifically says otherwise.
And is that unless in some of these statutes?
Representative Berger.
Is that unless in some of these?
I don't think so.
No.
Okay.
it's to cover so that if they're And so those two are, again, just to codify existing interpretation. The dash three is a little bit different and focuses on the Betsy credit and pertains to the discount rate that Energy sets for the credit. Currently, I believe they do that roughly once a year through the rules process. The intent of the dash three is one of the items that the group discussed was to provide more flexibility in recalculating that discount rate, and the dash three directs the Department of Energy to do that on a quarterly basis and then tries to provide some direction as to what gets incorporated into determining what that discount rate would be. And the language that's in here now is current inflation projections. So if, as we've seen recently, inflation projections can change rapidly, and by specifically incorporating that and redetermining this every quarter, there's more flexibility for incorporating those changes, as well as a market real rate of return. Those would be the two factors to proper, the attempt being to properly set the price for these credit transfers. Some more discussion needs to be had on what is meant by market real rate of return. The bill doesn't define that term. So the intent here is to hopefully stimulate some discussion among the committee as to thoughts as to what would be appropriate for that market real rate of return.
Okay. Mr. Graney, did you want to be heard on any of these? Or and the Department of Revenue?
Morning, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Mike Graney from Department of Energy. And I agree with Chris's characterization. The dash one and dash twos affirm and clarify how we've been interpreting the law, and there has been some uncertainty there. Just on the dash threes, my only suggestion, if you want us to recalculate the rates quarterly, it would be better to drop the requirement that those be established by rule, because rulemaking process takes at least 3 months with notice requirements and everything. So we could do it quarterly. It wouldn't necessarily be in rule. We could just issue an order and implement that. You know, we could still do a public process of getting input, but it wouldn't have to follow all the notice requirements and everything that are involved in rulemaking, which requires a number of months' advance notice in the Secretary of State's bulletin and various other procedures.
Is there a provision in administrative law for an order for this sort of thing, assuming the statute allows it?
Mr. Chair, I think we have the authority to do that, yes. If you write the statute this way without a reference to rule, we have the authority to implement that just through an administrative order.
And that requires, it has a different notice requirement, different hearing requirement.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Berger and then Representative Pence.
If I could pursue this. So in the dash three, what you're saying is to take out the by rule and just give you the authority to do this.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, that's correct.
And based upon, according to statute, inflation projections and market real rate of return, and we just heard from Chris, we don't know what that means. So maybe you could inform us of what you think that means, since you might be having to figure that out, Mr. Graney.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, I'm hoping you'll give us guidance, but I think the intent there is, because this is it's a present value on a tax credit that's normally taken over 5 years, so you've got the present value of the money. Part of it is what the rate of inflation, the nominal dollars versus real dollars are, but also there's a balance between having a market that has a sufficient return to the investors to have investors or purchasers of the tax credit being willing to make their investment in these energy projects versus other things. At the same time, enough of a return to the developers of the energy facilities that it will be make their projects financially viable, and they in turn being able to get the rate of return they need on their money. So I guess that's finding that balance and knowing that there's times where there would need to be adjustments, like reflecting the current economic situation is how we would interpret it. But we could certainly use additional guidance. And we have asked we have a professional accounting firm that works on this for us to update their recommendations based on the current financial situation we're in, because that present rate of return hasn't been changed in the last year.
And the situation has changed a lot. Yes. Representative Berger, you want to continue?
Yeah, Mr. I guess this is a question for you and staff. I haven't read the statutory references in the who has time to do these things between this amendment and the other bill that we're discussing with regard to the Betsy. If this is strictly with regard to the Betsy, not other tax credits, I'm wondering if maybe we shouldn't be talking about this in relation to another bill instead of this bill, just so that all of the information around this, the Betsy, is contained more succinctly in one place. But that's more of a process issue. Since we've got this other bill on our plate, I'm just wondering if that might be a more, since this applies very directly to just one tax credit, and the bill is designed to talk about, to sort of codify a whole bunch of things under tax credits, and that's just a, I'm just throwing that out there.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
Representative Benz is next, and then it'll be your turn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe a couple of questions of Ms. Buchanan and Director Ganey would illustrate a couple of the issues more clearly. The Dash 1 amendment indicates a restriction of the transfer to a C corporation, S corporation, or a personal income taxpayer. You might explain why we ended up at that particular point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vance, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. The calling out of these particular credits is because the statutes refer to transfers or sales to taxpayers, and the Dash 1 amendment is attempting to define what is meant by taxpayer. The other credits that are included in this list that you received, well, at least the footer indicates it's March 26th, are clearer or less ambiguous as to who may receive a credit. So that's the purpose of calling out these C corporation, S corporation, and personal income taxpayer.
Yes, please.
There was a lengthy discussion about whether or not we should include in that list a partnership, so that if a partnership purchased a tax credit, then each one of the partners would enjoy the benefit of the tax credit. And that, and a decision was made in the work group anyway to suggest to this group in the form of this amendment that that not happen. And instead we stick with the entity theory, that is a C corp, an S corp, or an individual taxpayer. Can you explain why we came down in the work group in that fashion?
Mr. Chair, Representative Vance, decision of the work group was to place in front of this committee codification of current practice and not to propose a policy change at this point. It clearly is a policy decision for the legislature to make, but this amendment would merely codify what our current practice is.
Mr. Chair, I think that when we reached this policy discussion, the issue, of course, was whether we would place the burden upon the Department of Revenue of trying to audit a much larger group of people. So if we were to extend or expand those who could buy these credits to include LLCs that are taxed, that choose to be taxed as partnerships, or partnerships with large groups of individual taxpayers inside them, the workload, the audit workload, which is the only device to check to make sure this is being done appropriately, would become very significant. So the choice we made at that level was to continue the limitation in the current statute to individual taxpayers and then call out more clearly what they were. And there are a number of people who have expressed concern that they would rather have partnerships available so large groups of people could gather together to then buy these tax credits and then allocate them individually. But our ability at the revenue department level to make sure there's no abuse of that arrangement would be challenged without more help. Have I appropriately captured some of the discussion?
Mr. Chair, Representative Vance, yes, you have. Thank you.
Yeah. And may I just simply add that as we looked at this, we took probably the most conservative position, primarily because we did not want to be in a position of setting up a market in these kinds of in tax credits that we're not qualified or capable of managing. And I think that was I want to really thank Representative Bentz for the work he did on this. I got in sort of at the end of the work group, but he'd already done most of the work. And so these changes primarily, as I understand it, simply codify existing practice and make it clear that that's what the authority is. Representative Call, and then we'll have Brune and Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question I'm going to put out there, and I don't know, just trying to get my head around what we're doing here, and I think maybe you or Representative Bentz can best answer it for me. So what we're talking about here is that we have different language and different statutes about transferability of tax credits. And we're trying to clarify, apparently you can have two statutes with different language about transferability, but that could mean the same thing. Or you could have two statutes with different language about transferability and mean two different things. And so the first order thing that we're trying to do here is give everybody a baseline, which is this is how, broadly speaking, all tax credits are going to be transferred. Thus, if a statute has different language in it, we know, since it's not using the baseline language or since it's deviating from the baseline language, it's the intent of the legislature to have a different mechanism for transferability or a different definition of transferability. And that's what, so we in the bill itself have a baseline, which is this is how all things will transfer, and then the dash ones and the dash twos are coming through and codifying into law the reality of how this works, and those represent a different mechanism than the baseline that the statute represents. Am I correct in that or not?
Representative McCall, yes. The short answer is yes.
Okay.
It is, because different words get used in different statutes, so when the Department of Revenue interprets those, their default position is that, I believe the way it's characterized, is that the words matter. So if specific words are used in one place and different words are used in a different place but appear to be the same concept, in this case transfer or sold, then it comes down to, okay, well, the legislature used two different words. They want two different things done. They talk to the AG and then talk about a weeds discussion. it can get pretty complicated pretty quickly. And so... And that's the original intent, was to create this large structure. But as the group realized how much those weeds were, just the level playing field.
So I just want one last comment, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Yeah, I think Representative Bailey is losing his love for the weeds. I'm very supportive of this, and I would hope that as we're getting into the weeds, that we're doing as much as we can to clarify as much of this law as possible. And I know that we're trying to avoid getting into the weeds here, but the concept is very important. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Brune.
Representative Bentz got to my question earlier. Thank you.
Oh, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to say that, you know, I'm very comfortable at this point with one and two, but like Representative Berger, I'm a little confused or leery of putting Amendment 3 in this particular place. It's a Betsy discussion, and like Representative Berger, I believe that it belongs more in the Betsy area. Mm.
Okay, thank you, Representative Berger.
Yeah, while I've got them here, I just have one more question for these folks.
Please.
The
yeah.
Dash 2, is this going to, in the limit of transferability to one transfer, is this going to impede the popularity or mean people are not going to take advantage of this because of the single transfer? you're out there talking to people about these. Is this an issue with people who want this credit? Is this going to mean fewer projects that are really eligible that we want to go forward will not go forward because it's a single transfer language? And I mean, you may not be able to answer that, but that's a question.
All right. Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, let me answer it this way. Since the transfer feature has been added, it has increased the number of projects that have gone forward, and a majority of the projects that are going forward are using the transfer, even with just the one time transfer. So that has been very popular. I think it would continue to be. I don't expect, say, a big fall off by not having further transferability. At the same time, there has been definitely interest, especially in the financial community, of having greater transferability, that some of the people involved there believe that that could spur additional projects. You know, I don't have a good sense of how accurate that expectation would be.
Mr. Chair, I'm not going to object to this, but I might say that what we're transferring is a tax credit, and you got to owe taxes to want it, and right now not many people are owing taxes. Just put that on the table. That may change over time. We hope that changes over time.
Yes, we certainly do. Otherwise, what is this committee for? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as a remark in response to Representative Berger's thoughts, the scope of folks interested in these tax credits was discussed at length because there was an obvious trade-off between the complexity of the machinery we have available and the increasing complexity required if we add more people to the transferee list. And that resulted in our long discussion with Director Graney about whether or not he felt comfortable with the current market of individual transferees, and the answer was at this point yes, and that he might have to come back later indeed if we encounter this unfortunate situation with fewer people paying tax or owing tax, given a slowdown in an economy. The other thing, though, I wanted to ask a question about is on Dash 3, and in response to Representative Riley's thoughts about this device, I think, Chris, you indicated this is not yet complete, Dash 3, and needs more work, and that is true. The problem we are facing is that the mechanism we have in place, which the Department of Energy has worked on diligently, is subject to market fluctuations and maybe isn't responding as quickly as we would like it to. And the intent of this device is to provide maybe more standards so that sometime later we are not accused of having sold these credits for less than they should have been sold for. And the hope is that this would tighten that process down. It needs a lot more work, and we don't want to create a bigger problem. We've been fortunate in what Director Graney has been able to do thus far, and we certainly don't want to make the situation worse.
Thank you. Colleagues, it's not obviously not our intent to work the bill today. We have it scheduled for Friday next week for an additional discussion, and hopefully by then we'll have some additional work on the Dash 3 amendment. Perhaps those who have a concern may want to talk with Representative Bentz about those concerns. Let me make one comment about Representative Berger and Representative Riley's comment about where this item should go. I do believe that something like the Dash 3s, perhaps refined some, really does belong in this bill. And the reason it does is because it deals with the issue of transference. This bill only deals with the transfer of these tax credits. It doesn't deal with anything else. It deals with the Betsy credit, but it also deals with a couple of the other credits directly. And it is, in one sense at least, it is a separate topic from the topic of what tax credits we should offer and what amounts, which is what the Betsy bill is about. And that's the reason it seemed to me that it belonged here. The issue of the valuation that we allow a transfer to take place at is an intimate part of the transfer process, it seems to me. Representative Riley.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think possibly when I understand better what this does, I might feel better. But I don't this is the first time I've actually seen
yes.
the amendment. And,
me too.
And I don't quite understand it.
Well, and
so.
That's one reason why we did not intend to work it today, even if we'd had the draft, the correct draft on the dash threes, because I wanted to give people a chance to look at it, to think about it, to talk to Representative Bentz, who has spent a lot of time talking, discussing with the two departments about the bill, and get either get more comfortable with it or have other criticisms that may refine it better. Anything else? So let's close the work session on this bill.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
2068, House Bill 2068, and we'll, colleagues, I want to spend the rest of our time this morning on the Betsy issues, and for that purpose, we'll open the work session. I can open them together because we're not actually going to work them today. Okay, so let's open our work session on the two bills, House Bill 3411 and House Bill 2472. Colleagues, as I indicated, this is not to work the bills today, but it's to have a further conversation on where we're headed get your input on where we ought to go. First, you do have do they have that?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and tell us what it is and where they can find it in their pile of materials?
In your packets, kind of in between, I think it was tucked in with the packet for House Bill 3411, is a summary sheet that has a table, and the title of the sheet is House Bill 2472 Potential Amendments.
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay.
Give folks a second to wade through the stack of paper in front of them.
Ah, there it is.
Okay.
Well, we have a new one.
Okay.
Colleagues, you're receiving
a
new amendment right now.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I've got two of the last six.
Oh, aren't you getting all of these? Those in the dash.
Oh, there's another one?
I am, and I have no idea what they're talking about.
You're receiving the six and sevens right now.
Yeah. Are there two sixes?
Okay, let me
restructure. Start again. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Well,
please, go ahead.
In the meantime, the end goal, as I understand it, is to take whatever amendments that will be or would be adopted to 3411 and place those into House Bill 2472. That's why discussing them at the same time.
Repeat that, Chris. I missed that. I'm in the weeds.
The end game, if you will, is to take whatever amendments. The committee has been discussing amendments to House Bill 3411.
Okay.
And we're currently up to 11, potentially 13 amendments for that. We'll get to that in a minute, though. But whatever amendments the committee was planning on adopting to 3411 will ultimately go and replace 2472. So
2472 is the mill that's going to move?
Yes.
Yes.
It's a gut and stuff.
It's a gut and stuff.
Okay.
So...
I need a new file folder with a new number. That's the important question that I have to get to. Since I'm carrying around this huge folder, I need to know what number to put on it. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging my...
You're welcome.
My staff appreciates that.
So the intent of this worksheet and this table in front of you with the House Bill 2472 potential amendments, that's why it's labeled 2472.
Okay.
So to explain the first mystery. Then the intent of the going through the columns, we have the first column labeled House Bill 3411 amendment, and those are the dash amendments for House Bill 3411. And the committee has discussed items 1 through 6, and you have in your packet items 7 through 11. So those are those amendments. House Bill 2472, that next column, you also those will be the amendments to House Bill 2472 that correspond to the dash amendments for 3411. So, for example...
I'm sorry.
Representative Berger, we did not want to make this easy for you.
Because clearly...
Okay. So, for example, under House Bill 3411, the dash 2 amendment,
no.
with 3411?
Adds the electric vehicle manufacturers to the renewable manufacturing facility. That policy is embodied in the Dash 4 amendment for House Bill 2472. So, as you can see, the table is a work in progress. It only contains the amendments that we've received back in the office, so I could confirm where they fit. And then you have a summary of the policy considerations, and then the last column, the Department of Energy provided some of their preliminary estimates for a few of the amendments.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Bailey.
Oh, boy.
Now, the one you're just getting is on the other bill, which you can probably ignore.
I think the thing I was just handed answered my question.
Oh, really? Okay.
But we have two Dash 7s in front of us. So the one that says House Bill 2472-7 does not currently appear on our matrix. Is that correct? What we were just handed says House Bill 3411-7 is what's on our matrix. It has a blank next to it under 2472 and currently says unknown. Is that correct?
That's correct, Representative.
And now we know.
Right.
And it's now known, Mr. Chair.
We've received it anyway. I don't know if it's known. That may be a different question.
So, Mr. Chair, we can go about this a couple of different ways. The committee has talked about the Dash 1 through 6 for 3411. We could talk about the other Dash amendments to 3411, if you like. We can walk through those systematically, or we can focus on 2472.
If we're moving to gotten stuff on 2472, I'd like to have the committee understand what the various amendments mean. It appears to me as though 4, 5, and 6 are three different replacement amendments. I haven't read them, so I don't know what they do. On House Bill 2472.
House Bill 2472, in your packet,
we have 4, 5, and then now we've just received 6 and 7.
Correct.
And all of them separately appear to be replacement for the entire bill, the way that they're drafted. Now, that may not be the intent, but that's what they appear to be. Can you explain what the differences are between these four?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, that is correct. Each of the amendments is a standalone gut and stuff. And okay. Talking with Ledge Council, they felt that was the easiest way to go about this. So I think if we walk through the Dash 4, the pattern will become clear.
And may I ask what happened to 1, 2, and 3?
1, 2, and 3 were other amendments to the original 2472, which pertained to a cap.
Right.
So those exist, but those are...
But they're irrelevant to the discussion we're having now.
Exactly.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. So let's go through those four, and so we understand what we're dealing with, and then have whatever conversation on those four.
Okay. So referring to the Dash 4, it does do a gut and stuff. It takes the drafted House Bill 3411 along with one of the policy considerations. It takes the 2472-4 is the original 3411 with the Dash 2 amendment to 3411. And so walking through the language here, on page 1 of the Dash 4 to 2472.
3411.
So it adds
right.
Yeah, House Bill 2472-4.
You said 32.
Did I?
Yes.
Okay. That they're all just digits.
Yeah, I know. I'm tracking.
That terrifies me. That last statement.
Okay. It is late in the morning, but let's focus for about 5 minutes, and then I think the choices that we faced will be clearer. And again, I think it's clear that we're not ready to vote on this bill today. but, But I would like the committee to understand what their choices are and to be prepared to discuss whether additional amendments are needed.
Okay.
So, go ahead.
Okay. Perhaps if you take the 2472-4 and on one side and have the House Bill 3411 on the other on in front of you. Page 1 of the dash 4, lines 4 through 22, all of that bold was in the original House Bill 3411. Okay, so that's part of the Guttenstock.
Okay.
And then flipping over to page 2 of the dash 4s, all of the bold in lines 1 through 22, again, are part of the original House Bill 3411. Okay. Then page 3, there's no change. There's no change again until page 6. And so if you look at page 6, lines 18 through 21, that bold language is the dash is the policy embodied in the dash 2 amendment for 3411. It adds the electric vehicle manufacturers to the Betsy.
11. Okay.
Okay. And then continuing on through the dash 4, turning to page 8, we see the next section of bold language. In lines 22 through 29, those are, that is again language from the original introduced House Bill 3411.
Chris, there are no deletions from 3411, only additions. Do you understand that what I'm getting at?
Yes. It, you take 3411
as written,
put
it in here. Okay.
And then an amendment made. There are a couple of amendments that delete language.
Yeah, but they aren't. We're not on that road.
Correct.
Yet. We're still with 3411 with dash 2, which is electric vehicles. Other than that,
correct.
It's 3411. Okay.
Correct.
Okay, I'm with you.
And then on page 9 of the dash 4. There is more bold language, lines 9 and 10. Again, that was in the original 3411. And then that takes you to the end of the bill.
Okay. How about the dash 5s?
Now, the dash 5, you'll see it's the same pattern. On page 1, lines 4 through 22 are from the original House Bill 3411. Page 2 of the dash 5, all of the bold there is from the original 3411. On the page 4, the bold there in lines 4 through 11 and 21 and 22 are original 3411 language. And then on page 6, is section 5 is the equivalent of the dash 3 for 3411. This is the one that removes the grants from their energy trust from the certified costs in determining the credit.
Okay.
So can you say that one more time, please?
The section 5 was not in the original 3411. This is the language that removes the energy trust grants from the certified costs. That is the policy embodied in the House Bill 3411-3 amendment.
And before we go on, let me just say that the arguments that Representative Berger made when we discussed this issue when we last had the work session on House Bill 3411 has persuaded me that we ought to stay away from this change.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And so I think if it's okay with the committee, from my point of view on the discussion, we should discard the Dash 5 amendments because it's not one that I'm hoping it's not one we'll work.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Representative Berger.
I guess if I'm tracking with, I thank you for that because that was on my mind.
We've had a number of discussions.
Yes.
With other entities about this issue, and I'm now persuaded that this is not a useful idea from the standpoint of trying to make sure that projects we need to get done actually happen.
Yeah, it hurts some projects we really want.
Yeah.
That aside, Chris, is it taking out Section 5 that would do that and leaving the rest of the dash because it's got 3411 language in here that isn't in the dash 4s?
If you...
Do you see what I'm saying?
I think so. If you don't want that policy adopted, you literally can throw away the dash 5.
What is this other language?
Well,
these are identical on the first two pages, aren't they?
Oh, they're identical. Okay, I haven't read them. Okay, then just throw away that if we want to do that. Okay,
and
got it.
That's part of the reason these were drafted that way. They are standalone gut and stuff. So if you had the dash 4 and the dash 5, the page 1, they are identical.
Okay, thank you. That's what I haven't. Okay,
so and that will be I expect that's a continuing thing.
Thank you. Okay, so that's a continuing thing as we look at this. All right, I'm tracking.
Yeah, okay. In advance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's looking at dash 5, section 6 appears to be in addition to that. Isn't it? Not included in dash 4.
Yeah, it's a reference. It is a reference to the statute that's amended in section 5, which doesn't appear in the dash 4s at all. This section isn't in the dash 4 at all.
Okay.
This is a reference to that section.
So that would go away.
Correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
You're representing a call.
Since we're already into the weeds, I just would like to throw more weeds onto the weeds or some mm-hmm. such thing. It's been brought to my attention that there are actually a small number of companies in the state who have gone substantially through the process of receiving their Betsy, mm-hmm. Have invested substantial sums of money, and they're at a final point where pretty much all they're waiting for is final certification. The way 3411 is written, we might be closing the door on them after they've relied to a great degree on existing law. And so as we're talking about doing further amendments, I'm wondering if we should also add into the discussion whether or not there is a specific small class of people who've relied to a great extent upon existing law that we might have some sort of transitional rule in place to protect them.
Mr. Graney.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Call, I think you raise an important point about planning and investments that are already underway. I think I would recommend that whatever bill you adopt that makes changes to the tax credit, you make them applicable to projects that receive preliminary certifications after the effective date of the Act, so that because we do have many projects that are both large and small, where people have made substantial investments based upon reliance upon that preliminary certification. And I think that would avoid the problem that Representative Call has raised. So if you simply have that a phrase like that at the end of the final bill, I think that would take care of that problem.
Thank you. And do you think that might be too large of a class of people? My concern is that there might be a capacity to game a rule written so broadly or a statute written so broadly. Is my concern valid?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Call, you have to make a break at some point. I think by requiring that the companies receive a preliminary certification, I think that's a reasonable cutoff. We could have people rushing applications in, but if we don't act upon them until the effective date of the Act, they really shouldn't be undertaking significant and substantial investments until they receive that preliminary certification, and that's current law. So I think that would be reasonable. And the revenue estimates we made about the impacts of the various options you're looking at assumed that it applied only to new projects, that is, projects receiving new preliminary certifications.
And one final point then. Just to try to make clear what you're saying, we have preliminary applications for preliminary certification in the pipeline right now, but people who might tomorrow decide that they want to try to rush through this process to receive a greater tax credit than what is envisioned by us right now, you have the capacity to slow that down so that they can't game the system. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Call. Yes, not that slowing actions is normally a virtue of state agencies, but we can do that.
In this instance, it might be.
Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I'm a little uncomfortable with the tone of this. We are offering this tax credit in order to encourage activity that we right now desperately need. Job creation, build out. So it isn't a matter of gaming the system. The system is here. We are, for our own reasons of budget, taking away from that system, and I'm already uncomfortable with that. So,
well, and adding some things.
Yeah, and adding some things to strengthen it. So I guess if people are ready to build, boy, do I want them to build, because, boy, do we need the jobs and we need the economic activity. That's not gaming the system. That's a good thing to get activity going in this state.
Yeah, I think we all agree with that point. The issues that this bill is attempting to apply to is to do that in the way which is most efficient and effective for us.
Granted.
Someone else over here? Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you captured what I was about to say, which is just to try to wrap up both of those two things. I think the role of the department is not necessarily to attempt to slow things down, but to make sure that we're making good investments. And to Representative Berger's point, it is very much the sort of thing that we want to have happen. So I hope that kind of brings it together.
So if we may, let's go through the six and sevens.
Okay.
Are you ready to talk about those?
I can try.
You haven't seen them before. All right.
But I can.
Do we know where they came from?
They came from the. I had requested from Ledge Council to take all of the amendments to 3411 and apply them to 2472.
Okay, so this is two more. Okay,
I believe it's two more. So if you're looking at the table, my guess would be that the dash six is the next one down on the list. But
okay.
And it is. So looking at the dash six, page one bold is in the original 3411, as well as the page two, again, following that same pattern. And the bold on page four is the original 3411. The difference is on page five, lines 20 and 21, which deletes that automatic 10% increase in the credit.
Oh, yeah.
So this is the 3411, or looks to me right at first blush anyway, is the equivalent to the dash four for 3411.
Oh, you're right.
So I assume these will just go in order.
Yeah, they do.
Okay, and then the dash sevens.
Dash sevens.
Yeah, Representative Bent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chris, can you go back to page six of the dash six? And does that section five capture what Representative Call was his point? And Director Graney, is that the correct language then to do what Director Graney said we should be doing?
Representative Betts, I believe that may need to say pre-certification rather than. But
I don't think so. It's referenced to Section 4, Section RS 469.215, and the change we make there is the 10% excess. And of course, that's determined at the time of the final certification. So this would be the correct amendment for that particular piece. I think the issue that Representative Call raised is not in this one.
Right.
Yes, Representative Bailey.
Early on in our discussions of House Bill 2472, we had a dash two and a dash three amendment that were put forward and then withdrawn because they were going to be rewritten for 3411. Are those now still pending amendments to 2472 that I think are referenced now in the 3411 dash maybe eight and nine?
I'm not sure that I have those. But let me answer your specific question. If there's been an amendment drafted and distributed to the bill, then it's alive until we send the bill to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, if Chris could explain the infield fly rule, actually, after we're done here, I'd appreciate that as well.
Thank you. You take that with him offline if you would.
Okay.
All right. The dash sevens.
Okay, the dash sevens.
The dash sevens to which?
2472.
We haven't started talking about
it. Yes. We're only talking about 2472 now.
The one they just handed you.
Wait, but the one they just handed me says 3411.
No, they handed you another 3411.
They
got another one.
Ignore the 3411 one.
Okay. We'll get to that.
I'm just looking for Dash Stephan.
Aye.
Okay. Page 1 looks like original language, 3411. And the bold on page 2, lines 1 through 22, look like the original 3411. And the change is on page 2, lines 28 and 29. And this looks like the policy that reduces the cap on those projects eligible for certified costs up to $20 million. It reduces that down to $10 million. And the way that's achieved is by deleting the reference to the 20 million projects in lines 28 and 29. And so how that works is, rather than having three categories, a $10 million category, $20 million, and $40 million, we move to a $40 million for the renewable energy resource equipment manufacturing facilities, and then $10 million for all other facilities.
And Mr. Chair, that would include then, if we go this way, the electric manufacturing thing that we also added in.
Mm-hmm. Well, it wouldn't make any change to that part because it comes under the $40 million cap.
Oh, it does come under
right.
the $40
million.
Okay,
in the
that's
case
what
of
I'm trying to get at.
Right, what it says here is $40 million in the case of a renewable energy resource equipment manufacturing facility.
Okay, so it is under the $40
because
million.
Of the change that we're proposing, that would not only apply to a renewable energy wait a minute. That may not be right.
Yeah.
The way this thing is written, it may. We need to find out, I think, whether the department wants to apply the $40 million cap or the $10 million cap to those programs, because the way this is written, it would appear to apply only to the manufacturer of renewable energy devices.
I believe the way that would work, Mr. Chair, is adopting the dash 4 modifies that language. These are kind of standalone Gutton stuff.
Okay.
So if you wanted to make sure that the electric vehicles got in for $40 million, if you refer back to the dash 4, it defines, I'm looking on page 6 of the dash 4, line 8, defines renewable energy resource equipment manufacturing facility means such that, and go down to line 15A, the renewable energy resource.
Right.
Line 17 and 18, or B, electric vehicles.
You're right. It's covered. So it becomes part of the definition of renewable energy resource equipment manufacturing facility. Okay. That makes sense. Yes. Representative Riley.
Thank you. So if we want to adopt more than one of these, we have to have a new amendment. Is that right, Chris? Because if we adopt 4 and then we adopt 7, 4 went away because it's a Gutton stuff.
That's probably a better question for Ledge Council, but my understanding is that adopting the 4 and the 7, they would merge those into one amendment. That did accomplish the policy in the dash 4 and the dash 7.
We will inquire.
Thank you.
And make sure that we have it right, whatever it is that we do. My suspicion is that Ledge Council, if we tell them we want them merged, would prefer that rather than drafting another amendment given the workload they are currently under. But I don't know that for a fact. We have this set for another work session next Friday, but I think we may want to work it earlier than that. Didn't we have this conversation yesterday? We may want to work it earlier than that in order to get through with this. Now, let me ask, while we're here, do these three amendments, 4, 6, and 7, embody the total of the conversation that we've been having about the necessary pieces of this, with the exception of the Energy Trust, which we've decided not to act on? Or are there other issues that we have dealt with in our discussion on 3411 that are not embodied here? Did you want to answer that question?
Mr. Chair, I might add to it very quickly is in that my understanding is that these amendments do not cover the range of the discussion that we've had, and that there are several additional issues that may have some potential amendments that are coming forward as well.
Okay, and are those amendments being prepared?
Yes, they are, Mr. Chair.
What are their topics?
Mr. Chair, they are a little bit different language to address some of the concerns that were brought up in this committee around some of these additional issues. There's also some language that addresses a comment that Director Graney made during his testimony regarding timing of how we do this and to look at language around a temporary change as opposed to a permanent change.
Oh, okay. All right. And do we have any idea when those amendments are likely to be ready?
If I knew that, Mr. Chair, I'd be a rich man.
Or rich in amendments, anyway. Yes, that's right.
In addition to that one, I'm sensitive and interested in the change to the making it a temporary change rather than a permanent one, that the message that that might send to the larger investment community. But did we also then, is there an amendment being prepared, or is that the issue that Representative Call raised about the timing, is that going to be contained in some of the other ones, or do we need a separate one to address that specifically in addition to the ones Representative Bailey mentioned?
I don't know. Representative Call raised the issue of at what point this bill supersedes the current process.
Mm-hmm.
And the response from Mr. Graney was we ought to do that at the point of the initial certification. If you've got the initial certification, the current law applies, and if you don't have it, then the new law would apply. I don't know if we don't have anything drafted on that, do we?
It was my understanding that we would need to draft that to make that clear. Right. And I guess I'm asking, are we going to order that? Or
I think we have to.
Yes.
Because I think we do need to make it clear, recognizing that there's some sections it doesn't apply to. The one that was raised by Representative Bence, for example, it doesn't apply to, because that's an issue that has to be dealt with at final certification. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, time is short, and I know Representative Bence has offered an amendment to 3411 that I think needs to be also put into
Which one?
Seven.
That's dash seven, and Representative Bence, do you want to...
I don't know what it is. So.
Well, do you want to describe it, because it's your amendment, and I'm fully...
Well, that's the one we just received,
yes.
Isn't it? Yes, please.
Drawing your attention to 3411, the original line 25 indicates that the it's a subset of Section 3, which reads, in addition to any failure of the applicant to meet the criteria established, the department may decline to issue a preliminary certification to an applicant for the erection, construction, installation, or acquisition of a large facility based upon the following criteria. And then there are four criteria called out. The third of those criteria is found in line 25, subset little c, the environmental impact of constructing and operating the facility. My amendment would delete that line entirely, in its entirety, because if you look back up at line 12, under section 2A, it states the applicant has complied with all state and local requirements for licenses and permits required for the facility. So the applicant would have already of necessity gone through the process of having the environmental impacts addressed by the permitting process, or in the permitting process, the local one, and land use process and so forth. So I think this addition of this rather, I'm going to call it broad, an undefined standard adds uncertainty and a duplication of effort, and I think it should come out. And that's what my amendment does.
Okay. I'm having trouble reading this.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Berger.
If you would go to 2472-4 or 31, either one, the original... 3411. Let's get off 3411 since it's going away and get the language of which is the original black language in section 2.
Yep.
Okay, where it says section 2.2a, the applicant has complied with all state and local requirements for licenses and permits under the facility. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
If you keep going down, you'll get to Section 3, and then in addition, okay, and there are four subs under in addition.
Where's that?
On the next page.
On the top of page.
Yeah,
two.
A, B, C, and D. Okay, are you there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Number C is the issue. It is incredibly broad. The department would have to decide what environmental impacts they're talking about. All of the permitting, including environmental permitting, are already handled before. It's like what is this, and how would they know it? It's just incredibly broad language, and it's sort of a what's the department going to do with this if they've already complied with local requirements for licensing and permits, including environmental permits?
It's,
yes.
I have to apologize. The amendment you are looking at, the 3411-7, is a previous version prepared last week.
Okay.
And the new one has not yet been handed out. It's my fault for not bringing down the correct pile of documents. The Representative Berger has correctly pointed out what this amendment should say.
Should say.
Correct. And so,
but it doesn't actually say
but
that.
But it doesn't say it, no.
Okay. So now I'm not confused anymore.
Okay. I didn't look at the amendment. I'm looking at the policy piece.
Right.
Now I understand what you're trying to get at.
Yes.
I'd like to ask Mr. Graney what his, how he would respond to Representative Berger's comment.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, that is very broad, and I think the permit requirement is adequate for in terms of our administration.
So we don't need to see.
I think not. The other thing too, there was a related amendment that was 3411-6 on the timing of applying for the permits versus receiving them. To clarify, because many of these projects will be applying for their applications for whether it's air quality or water quality permit while they're going through the process of getting pre-cert. And there, that 3411-6 language reflected that difference between pre-cert and final cert and receiving the permit. And that language needs to be in there, too, regardless of what you do on this.
Mr. Chair, on our cheat sheet, that says it's now -11.
Okay.
Is
yes.
that correct, Chris?
And so the scheme that Legislative Council has come up with is not going to work because they went back to the original bill and didn't include these refinements.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Representative Riley.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify or have someone clarify for me that Section 2, Sub 2A...
Of which bill?
Of any bill. Pick your bill because they're all the same. Actually covers the environmental permit.
I'm sorry. Say that one more time.
I just want to clarify that this policy that's being discussed
22A
actually does contain the environmental permit that's referred to in 3C.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riley, that's how we interpret it. So for, say, a wind energy facility, for example, depending on the size, it would either have to get county approval or, if it's a large facility, go through the State Energy Facility Siting Council, and that would be one of the conditions of receipt of the final certification.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, I apologize for my glib answer earlier in response to your question about the amendment. I should, just for clarification, my office is helping to facilitate drafting of the amendments we discussed, and given the overwhelming workload that Legislative Council is under right now, I expect them back at any time.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Call.
Just trying to hearken back to some of the earlier discussions that we've had on this, there's one thing I don't see addressed here, which is the concern about one large wind facility being characterized as a group of smaller wind facilities to have access to more tax credits. I don't see that addressed here. Is that something we're going to address?
I think, Mr. Chairman, that, yes,
that in one of these?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Call, it's in the -7, so I'm not sure if
Thank
it's
you.
In the other amendment.
I think it's also in the -4s.
Is it?
In the original.
Of 2472.
Sorry.
On 2472. You know, I think what we're going to need to do is get a work group together solely for the purpose of combining these amendments. I think, and let me put words in the committee's mouth for a minute and see if I get head nods, I think that we have agreed or that we're ready to consider an amendment that would do what 4, 6, and 7 do. In addition, the items that Mr. Graney has just raised about changes that we need to make in the original 3411, changes to the requirement that the applicant has complied with all state and local requirements that are embodied in one of the amendments for 3411. That change needs to be made in House Bill 2472. I think I'm ready to agree, and I'd like other people's comments, with the idea that we remove sub C under section 2 sub 3 sub C, the environmental impact of constructing and operating the facility, because that's already subsumed under the piece on compliance with state and local requirements for licenses and permits. I'm ready to remove that. Anybody think that that one shouldn't be removed? Okay, so let's go with that. And then what I would propose is that we get a very small work group consisting of me and the vice chairs to try to compile these amendments. And then amendments we have not yet talked about, we try to bring in separately. I think we're stuck with redrafting 4, 5, and 4, 6, and 7 anyway because of the need to make the fixes in 3411 that are embodied in these amendments that we've discussed. Are there others that committee members know about right now that we ought to talk about while we have another 10 minutes? Representative Riley and then Representative Reed.
Well, the items that you talked about just now, plus the timing issue, the pre-certification issue.
Yeah, correct. Thank you. The issue the Representative Call raised.
Right. Yes.
Yes, and I've seen that somewhere, so it must be in one of the amendments on 3411.
Definitely.
I don't know.
You don't think so. Representative Reed.
That's what I was going to say, Representative Reed.
Okay, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was an issue that came up concerning small projects, and I don't know if there's an amendment that anyone is working on, but if no one is, then I will.
My issue on small project was the energy trust issue, right. and if we're taking away the dash four, then my issue is on that is, or dash five is off.
Yeah, was that the issue or something else?
Something else.
Okay.
The issue has to do with the fact that some of the smaller projects are probably more job creating devices and more community oriented. In fact, many are community oriented. Have a built in. Some people have been working for as many as 4 or 5 years now on these projects, and they have been anticipating the full amount of the current credit. And these are not $100 million projects at all. These are much smaller. And I fear that in trying to reduce this credit, we are going to be leaving along the sidelines a number of these smaller community-based organizations. And I'm working with a group now, and I'll try to come up with something that addresses that issue.
Thank you. That would be helpful.
The pre-certification point might do.
Okay, might do it. And then Representative Bailey has a couple of other amendments that I think you described briefly for us to look at. What my thought is that we ought to ask for one general amendment which combines the issue that Mr. Graney raised on line 12 of the 4, 5, and 6s, 4, 6, and 7s. And the issue on page 2, lines 6 and 7 of the 4, 6s, and 7s, and then the changes that each of the 4, 6s, and 7s make, so we get all of those items in one amendment, and then the additional amendments that Representative Bailey wants to talk about separately, the change that Representative Bence wants to talk about separately, and then Representative Call's proposal to embody Mr. Graney's suggestion that the pre-certification is the point at which the new rule should apply. If we haven't got a pre-cert, the new rule applies. If you have it, then the old rule applies. Okay? Are we there? Does anybody else want to join that work group? I didn't think so. All right. With that, we'll close the work session on these two bills. Colleagues, you're probably not going to see 3411 anymore. If I want to work, I probably can't work this until next Friday, can I? Because we won't have the amendment before then. Can we put it up Thursday? All right. Colleagues, I want to announce that we're going to open a work session on 2472 on Thursday, in addition to whatever we've already posted, in hopes that we have the amendments ready by that time. Maybe we can work it a day early. And with that, we're adjourned.
I figured you had the infield flyer.
They're only digits. They're all just digits.